It's time for The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, May 3rd. We have two guests with us coming from different political perspectives to talk with us about the top news stories of the week, state, national, and international. And we welcome your input, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us in studio David Blaska, former Dane County Supervisor. His Blaska's Bring It blog can be found at ibmadison.com. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Joy.
And Louis Fortas is with us. He is Editor-in-Chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. He joins us by telephone. Good morning, Louis.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, David.
Yeah, we are in... Boy, fairly nice weather, I guess, here in southern Wisconsin, but northwest Wisconsin really got nailed Wednesday, Thursday, and probably even still a little bit this morning, up to 18 inches of snow in parts of northwest Wisconsin. On the ground, people are digging out here. Wisconsin tourism officials are trying to make the most of it, promoting a rare cross-country skiing opportunity for May. So you want to go cross-country skiing up in Cable, David?
No, I don't even want to play golf here in Madison, which we got rained out by a cold rain yesterday. But boy, that's the glass is half full for our tourism officials, right?
Yeah, but the fishing opener featuring Governor Walker on a lake near Cable has been canceled because the lakes are frozen over as well as a foot of snow, and some of the tourism folks up there or the tourist business are kind of bummed out. I would imagine, Louis, that this has an economic impact up north.
I think it certainly does, but I was pretty impressed with this idea of the last chance cross-country event because, I mean, you can't control the weather, but you can certainly try to adjust to it and try to, get some advantage out of it. So I was pretty impressed when you mentioned that they're capitalizing on their what others would view as adversity.
Yeah, but boy, will spring,
good
true
luck
spring,
accomplishing it.
Yeah, will spring ever arrive? We did have a little taste of some 80s earlier this week, and that was lovely. But it's, I guess, one day, someday, spring will come.
Especially compared to last year.
Yeah, that's right. And David, you're feeling okay? I understand when you were golfing, you took a tumble out of a golf cart.
I got thrown from a golf cart, which I think is probably a first world problem, not a third world problem. but try that sometime. I did. I got thrown from a golf cart. I did a barrel roll on some very wet fairway.
Wow.
My clubs went flying. I'm a little bit of pain today.
Yeah, his back hurts, but he came in anyway. So, Louis, how's your health? Everything okay?
Yes, it is. Actually, I had rotator cuff surgery, so I'm in a sling here. So,
oh, my gosh. Well, let's...
So we'll kind of be sympathetic. But, David, we can get training wheels for that golf cart.
Yeah, I got to take for remedial. Actually, someone else was driving, took a sharp left turn, and I wasn't ready for it.
Well, we'll talk about, I don't know how painful this will be. Let's see. The first story that we'll talk about just released half an hour ago, the jobs report. U.S. employers added 165,000 jobs in April. Hiring was much stronger than the previous 2 months than first thought. The gains trimmed the unemployment rate to a four-year low of 7.5%. The Labor Department report shows the job market is improving despite higher taxes and government spending cuts. So what do you make of that, Louis?
Well, I think it is certainly better than people had expected. And, I mean, they'd like it up to a quarter million, but 160, whatever, is a whole lot better than it could have been. I mean, you have some serious problems with the economy right now, and there are not much we can control. I mean, Europe is bordering on recession, and Southern Europe is in a severe depression. The unemployment rates in Spain and Greece are higher than the unemployment rate ever reached in the height of the Great Depression in the United States, just to give you some idea of how rough it is over there right now. And And so Europe is a major, major, you know, market for us. And when they're in recession, they're not buying. And China is growing slower than it is growing at a rate that most countries would love to be growing at, but it's still growing at a slower rate than it had been in the past. So again, there are things like this that we can't control that are affecting the economy. So it's we may be coming out of recession. The rest of the world isn't necessarily.
Yeah, but this says, David, that you know the job market is improving despite higher taxes and government spending cuts. So
well, that's you know I suppose there's a political tinge to everything. I know that some folks have, especially on streets in places like Madrid and Athens, you see the coverage and the demonstrations against austerity. But when you really max out your credit card, whether or not this Reinhardt and Rogoff kerfuffle about an error on their spreadsheet, whether it's your debt exceeds 90% of your gross domestic product or not. The fact is that they can't afford all of the goodies that that they've and the lengthy vacation. So, and also, Lewis, I would just note that we're in sequester. I don't think very much of that has been alleviated, a little bit here and there. And no stimulus 3, 4, or 5, whatever, and the economy is improving. I said this 3 years ago, let the bubble work itself out. It'll be a little bit painful. Ronald Reagan in 1980-82, they called it the Reagan recession. He said, "Stay the course."
Well, I mean, if you look at Reagan, Reagan also bailed out, you know, Harley Davidson, for example. They intervened when they felt it was necessary. So you can let the economy recover by itself, and it's just going to take a lot longer. You're going to have a lot more pain, and it's more than also a lot more pain. When people are unemployed and they're sitting at home, you will never regain that labor for those days lost. It's kind of like when the plane takes off and there are empty seats. They'll never make any money off of those empty seats for that particular flight,
right?
And that's a serious thing. That you have a situation where there are a lot of needs in this country. I mean, especially our infrastructure.
Right?
Is there a way to do something about this? And again, I'll throw a lob to you, Dave. I mean, it can even be some public-private thing where you have some private investment in it or whatever, but we need to fix and repair and update our infrastructure.
Well, give me some examples. I mean, I think, you know, certain folks will greet you with a lawsuit, but, you know, yes, you can do like the old Soviet bloc countries and dictate daily flights to Fargo, for instance.
You can take that flight, David.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm like to take it. Might be warmer there. But is it productive? And I think government is not the best picker of winners and losers. Ultimately, you've got to trust that unseen hand that Adam Smith talked about. The people, who could have predicted iPods, for instance? But there they are.
Let's talk about another jobs-related story in the state of Wisconsin. A state audit says Wisconsin's flagship jobs agency, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, has repeatedly not followed the state's laws, has given money to ineligible projects, has failed to monitor those who did get money. Now Republicans are calling for changes. They haven't been specific about what those changes may be. WEDIC's director, Reed Hall, says that significant headway has been made to correct the issues that the audit found. So, David Blasco, what do you think of this agency? Is it still a good idea in principle?
Well, it's a little over 2 years old now. They've got a new director since November, Reed Hall. It is really a new agency. That said, if they've got problems, they've got problems. One thing that strikes me joy about all this is Republicans control the legislature, but obviously there are no rubber stamp for Scott Walker. They're giving him some trouble on the school voucher issue. they're doing their oversight job on this agency, also on UW tuition, and this so-called slush fund or extra reserves, whatever you want to. So they're doing a great job of oversight, and I think you're seeing here there are no sacred cows. This agency here is the agency that's supposed to grow jobs, that's supposed to cater to business people. There's been talk about buying, Bucks tickets or Brewers tickets. I'm not sure what that's all about unless they're whining and dining folks, which you couldn't do probably as a state agency. This is a quasi state agency, I guess.
Yeah. So what do you think of it, Lewis?
Well, first of all, the head of the Audit Committee, Republican Senator Rob Coles, is a real honorable guy. I mean, I think he's a real stand-up senator. And I think he's looking at this very objectively, and there are some serious problems here. And I think it's one of these situations where if it isn't broke, don't try to fix it. And when Republicans come in, they say, well, we need more private sector involvement, which sounds good, but it's a hell of a lot more complicated. The private sector has one bottom line, and it's easier, and I've been successful in the public sector and the private sector, so let me speak. The private sector is easier than the public sector. The public sector, you're balancing so many other things in addition to trying to, be effective and reach certain goals, and the goals are also more complicated than simply, ultimately the bottom line. So I think when you come in with these saying, okay, we're going to make this a public-private deal and this is going to change everything, well, it's complicated. It takes a while. If you want to pursue that model, it's going to take a while to make that happen. And it's one of two things here. You're either going to say, let's go back to what was working before, or if we really want to make this work, then we're going to have to put a lot more thought and a lot more energy and a lot more oversight into this to make it happen.
Yeah. So you think all is well now, David, with this agency?
No, it obviously isn't. But I think, first of all, and I've been on a few state agencies where you get the audit report. They do a great job, by the way. And this is, part of the, I think it goes back to roughly the first La Follette administration where you had these agencies that are nonpartisan. The Legislative Reference Bureau is one of those, and the Audit Bureau, and then when they do the
Fiscal Bureau.
Those are the three. So we always regarded those reports as very helpful roadmaps to kind of, and you check them off, and you would assign, okay, let's make sure we're doing. Who's in charge of this? Making sure this doesn't happen again. They're very helpful. I don't think they're punitive. I know that the headlines will make it. I'd love to see a headline saying Abe Lasky's department is A-okay. It's right on target. You're not going to see that headline, but you do see those audits.
Isn't that in your blog? I thought I saw that headline on your blog.
I had an audit of my blog, and it was just absolutely top-notch. Thank you for the plug, Lewis.
I think you should get credit where credit's due. All right.
Even if I have to give it to myself.
There will be more on this issue coming up tonight on Wisconsin Public Television's Here and Now at 7:30. Peter Barca will be on the show tonight talking about WEDIC's troubles, and the new head of WEDIC, Reed Hall, will also be on the program. So that's coming up Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television at 7:30 this evening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review, talking with our guests about the top state, national, and international news stories of the week. David Blaska is with us, and Lewis Fortas. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This afternoon, it's your views on the news after 4 o'clock. John Munson and his guest will welcome your calls about the news stories you think are the most important of the week. Your views on the news after 4. This is our Week in Review, where we have two guests from different political perspectives talking with us about the stories of the week. The U.S. Justice Department is telling the State Department of Public Instruction to make sure students with disabilities in the private school voucher program are not discriminated against. There was a lawsuit filed by the parents of three children and a couple of other groups that says that the Milwaukee private voucher schools are shortchanging disabled youngsters. Louis Fortas, you're in Milwaukee. How concerned are you about disability discrimination in the voucher schools?
Oh, I think it's extraordinarily serious, of course. But I think the voucher schools are shortchanging a whole lot of other students. And there isn't much accountability. There isn't much transparency. And I think it's really kind of an experiment that has failed. And I think people have to, you know, adjust to that and say, you know, okay, we tried something, it didn't work, so let's step back and quit spending a lot of taxpayers' money on schools that don't have to have the accountability, the transparency, whatever, of the public schools. And when they do a little bit of testing here and there, they find that they're not doing any better and in many cases worse than the public schools. And when you just the idea of self-selection, where you say, you know, your child automatically goes to a public school unless you intervene as a parent and get them into a private school of some kind. So you have some parental involvement. So that fact alone, that self-selection, should provide higher test scores than that. It doesn't. Something is not right here. And if people want to pursue this privatization of schools, which I think is totally the wrong course, then they have to quit. They have to deal with reality and understand what they're doing right now isn't working.
David?
Well, I'm first of all, on the question you raised, Joy, anytime public money is used, there can't be any discrimination. So certainly I have no argument with the Department of Justice on this. But I think, you know, here at the UW-Madison there, Professor John Witt, and I think there's another who has a partner at the University of Arkansas, have been doing longitudinal study of choice schools, and they do find a difference, a 10% higher graduation rate and better reading scores. That's the gold standard of studies. But, you know, but just a minute, Louis. It almost, I'm going to say something a little bit radical, Joy. It almost doesn't matter. Growing up on the farm, we were John Deere people, John Deere Green. And we kids was, and then my best friend, well, no, it's Alice Chalmers, the orange tractors. And someone else would say a Case. Which was the best tractor? Well, my dad thought John Deere and his dad thought Alice Chalmers. Who's to say? You know, I don't think we should be penalizing parental involvement. The fact that this school for my child makes some sense, that we should reward that. I think the one size doesn't fit all model is so 19th century, really. There's a revolution in education, online, you know, virtual. Some people say, oh, they're making a profit. Private schools, good. That means that somebody is getting some value for their education.
But the testing that just came out said that the private schools in Milwaukee and the public schools in Milwaukee, the public schools are doing even a little bit better.
That's good. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm happy for that. That doesn't mean that if more people choose, or if for instance, there's a greater processor speed as there used to be for a Microsoft empowered PC over Apple until Apple changed its. That doesn't mean that people shouldn't buy Apple, and then of course they change their processor. And I would also say, Joy, that those results are that finding is in dispute, and I cited the WIT study.
Yeah, what about these?
The WIT study is speaking about something in dispute. I mean, there is a, you know, classic study of an academic thing that's been in dispute. But first of all, I mean, no one's against parental involvement. When you made that comment, David, I think parental involvement is great. All I'm saying is that when you do have parental involvement, things are better. And the fact that the schools that have parental involvement because the parent had to make a decision would automatically think that self-selection would give you a somewhat higher test result. And I think Joy is absolutely right, is that these voucher schools are not giving these children a better education. And certainly we want innovation, and certainly we want creativity. And, you know, public schools have developed magnet schools over the last, you know, 25 years in Milwaukee, and they've been very successful. Those, you know, French immersion schools and German immersion schools, and they're doing the technology schools, and that's all great stuff. But that can all be done within the public school system, where there are standards, where teachers have to have an education, where you see the results. I mean, this is and there's some accountability. That's what's lacking right now. And I'm saying, you know, it's like it goes back to the first issue of the changing the Department of Commerce to this public-private partnership. These things are complicated. If you're going to do it. If you really want to accomplish it, do it right. And both of these have been failures. And,
let David comment.
Well,
on
only that. First of all, they haven't been failures. First of all, I trust parents to make this. I trust people to make. No control is more local than the kitchen table. Mom and dad deciding where their child is going to go to school. And, you know, if these results come out and people see them, they say, you know what, I'm not going to send my kid to Mesmer, I don't think, because I don't think, da-da-da. For whatever reason, they factor in. And I trust people to make those decisions. So, yes, I'm happy that the public schools are responding to the challenge of competition. And because they know that they have. Now, I would say in Madison, that's not the case. They basically passed the law. They basically made a rule saying you could try to get a charter school through this Madison School Board, but good luck.
What do you make of? Wait a minute, Liz. What do you make, David, of Republicans like Senator Mike Ellis, who does not think the voucher school expansion is a good idea?
Joy, I wrote a letter, one page letter to Senator Ellis. I put a stamp on it, and I haven't sent many letters lately, but I thought that would be unique enough to get his attention. You know, he came out and he said, well, it'd be okay if you have a referendum. Let's say that you have a referendum in the Neenah School District, and it's 99-1 against vouchers. Is the Neenah School District that much imperiled by that one family? I don't think so. Let's say the vote is 50-49, Joy. Vouchers lose. But doesn't that 49 tell you something? Shouldn't those? Why would we deny the choice that we give to almost every other sector of our lives? And some companies succeed, some companies fail, and in the supermarket of ideas. And certainly, there's so much ferment. The education world is a very interesting segment of our economy in that it is that change is there now. There are people resisting it. And Lewis, the elephant in the room that we haven't been talking about is the teachers' union. And we know that Milwaukee and Madison are two barricades against strongholds of the union movement. And the problem with a lot of these private schools is they're not unionized. That's the real issue.
Lewis?
Well, I think the real problem is they don't have the standards. You don't have to have a college education. You don't have to have education credits. You don't have to have anything to be teaching in these voucher schools. But let me address the unions for a second. I think the unions are it's a very complex thing in many, many ways that they are essential. They have held up standards, in other ways that they have held back certain progress. And when you were talking about in Madison the fact that voucher schools wouldn't get it, you have a school system in Madison that is spectacular. And, you know, a big part of it is you have a very, sophisticated, workforce there.
Lewis, can I tell you that who it's not spectacular for? Kaleem Kerr, the president of the Madison Urban League, has said fewer than 50% of black kids graduate. So it's not spectacular for them. And he tried to start a charter school, which is a public school, but it would have been non-union.
That would have been serving at first minority boys only, and then it was expanded to minority boys
under pressure.
But anyway, we really aren't able to spend a lot of time debating that specific aspect of the charter school in Madison. We have callers, so let's go to John in West Bend. Hello, John.
Good morning. The question I have is, the charter schools, whether they're in a STEM program or in the arts, they're receiving taxpayer funds of about $7,000, I understand, where, for example, the Milwaukee school system, I believe I could be wrong here, but I'm sure I'm in the right solar system here, they cost about $17,000 to educate a child. So it's a net benefit to the taxpayers to promote charter schools to educate their child rather than in the public school system. So what I please explain to me why there's such an enormous disparity between the cost to educate that child in a charter school. Is a parent pointing up the rest of the money? How can they get...
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're getting a little bit lost on private school vouchers. A charter school is usually a public school, isn't it?
It is a public school, but you know it has many of the aspects of a private school in that it's, for instance, the school I mentioned, Joy, which is a non-instrumentality school, so it can have its own rules. But it is. We're still talking about public money here, by the way. But the idea, Lewis, is that the money follows the child, goes where the child wants to go. Or the parents. And so whether it's a private school voucher or whether it's a charter school, it's really the same principle.
No. In any case, so do you have a comment on what the caller's concern was, Lewis?
You get what you pay for. And if you want a good STEM education, which is in many ways more expensive because you have more equipment and everything, it's going to cost more money. There's no kind of cut-rate way of doing it. Certainly, everybody wants to be efficient. Certainly, everybody wants to save money. But, you know, when you go buy a car, you go buy a house, you don't say, you know, give me the absolute cheapest. You say, you know, is it worth paying a little extra for that? Is it worth paying a little extra for that? You want intelligent decision-making. And so there is no magic here. If something is costing... should be costing $17,000 and somebody's doing it for $7,000, I mean, you kind of look at that pretty carefully, don't you?
Well, meanwhile, there is a Republican bill in the legislature just introduced that would give parents a tax credit if they send their children to private schools. So parents would eventually get a $1,500 tax credit for elementary students and a $2,500 tax credit for those in high school. So, David, what about this? Should we give a tax credit to parents who choose to send their children to private schools?
No, I'm willing to say no to that. I think that Governor Walker's original proposal is much fairer, because right now you have to have the means and wherewithal to someone fell out of the golf cart.
Yeah, I was going to. Go ahead.
So, I would say no.
All right. Well, I would think you would agree with that, Lewis. No to tax credits for sending your children to private schools.
I'll agree with his part about the no. Yes, correct. I agree with David on that.
Well, Glenn Grothman, one of the authors of this bill, will be on our state capitol report on Monday from 7:30 until 8. So you can talk more about this particular legislation on Monday during the state capitol report. All right, moving on to another education-related issue. New UW figures show that money in reserve funds at the UW system is projected to grow by another $150 million by the end of June. A UW spokesperson says that's a very optimistic projection and that it really isn't possible to know whether the balance would grow or shrink by that time. Lawmakers criticized the university after learning it had a nearly $650 million surplus or unrestricted cash reserves. Lewis, what should happen to the university? Should it lose funding? Should tuition be frozen? Are you okay with the UW system having this surplus?
Well, I think they can't win no matter what they do, and the legislature who... most of them do not have any serious management experience, you know, are just sitting back and being very critical. If they did not have any kind of reserves, then that same legislature would be saying, this mismanaged, these people don't know what they're doing. You know, they should have reserves. Then when you do have reserves, it's, aha, you're taking our money and you shouldn't have a reserve. Every business of any that's well managed tries to have a reserve. In these recessionary times, it's very, very difficult. But you still try to have some reserves. If I were running the university and I would look at what's going on in Madison right now and also across the country in terms of, you know, everybody cutting back, and I would be fighting to preserve some kind of quality education because we do have a fantastic university system here. that I would certainly try to do everything I can to have a reserve. I think it's just it's prudent management. Now, what's the right amount of a reserve? I don't think anyone can say it depends on the circumstances. It depends on what's going on. If you're in a real, go-go economy, you're probably going to have less of a reserve. Right now, I think you need a reserve. And I don't think, for about a $6 billion operation or $5.8 or whatever billion-dollar operation the university system is, I don't think this is out of the question by any stretch of the imagination. What, 10, 12%, 13%, something in that range?
Yeah. So what about all the talk about freezing tuition because of this cash reserve? Or the governor also said, hey, maybe we should not give the UW system an extra $181 million in the next state budget. Let's give them part of that, but use the rest of that money for public school aid. Lewis.
I mean, if you want to reallocate within the education, I think education is critically important. And I think David, from talking about his background, I grew up in the central city of Chicago. Education is what gave us a chance, and only education. And so I think we should never be shortchanging education. So if you're talking about reallocating somewhere within the education thing, that's fine. But if you're talking about taking this money out to just build more roads, I'd say, no, that's wrong.
Yeah. And you're okay with a tuition freeze in light of this news?
I wouldn't want to make that decision without a lot of study. I don't know the answer to that right now.
David?
Well, once again, I think the legislature, this legislature at least, this Republican legislature, is taking seriously its oversight role. There is, you said lack of management experience, but, there's the CPA caucus of certified public accountants kind of came up with this. First of all, Lewis, I think there's a thing about accountability. These funds, this $1 billion of balance, the $648 million and slush fund, so to speak. Were you going to be all right, Lewis?
nothing like biasing the fund with a...
Everybody has a point of view, but a slush fund or cash reserves,
you can put an asterisk next to that if you want. But the point is accountability. This was nowhere on the books. This was nowhere... The legislature, they actually had to go through the spreadsheets practically, and they just popped up, what is this? Asked one of those CPAs, and... Mr. Lang, the fiscal bureau guy, dug into it. So number one is accountability for a public institution, Lewis, and I don't think that anyone can argue with that. The second thing is the university has been pleading poverty year after year after year. So we've had from 2009 to 2012 tuition increases of 5.5% every year. During the last 10 years, Wisconsin the University is ranked number one for tuition and fee increases, 134% increase over those 10 years. Mom and dad are having a tough time. The fact of the matter is that there is some price resistance nationally. Tuition is going up. It's become a real issue, and certainly in the last presidential election, Joy. There was a lot of debate on student loans and indebtedness. So the populist thing is, and I'm finding Democrats as well saying yes, let's have a tuition freeze.
Okay, well, let's leave.
I think that's a compelling argument, and I agree with you.
We'll leave that issue there quickly. There was a sit-in at the UW-Madison Chancellor's office this week at David Ward's office. The UW-Madison students were upset over the situation with Palmero's. Is that how you pronounce that?
Palermo.
Palermo's Pizza. The chancellor had refused to end a contract with Palermo's Pizza over allegations of unfair labor practices. The workers at Palermo's have been on strike for 11 months. Louis Fortas, should the UW end its contract with Palermo's Pizza over this?
Well, there's been some recent NLRB, National Labor Relations Board's decisions, and I think many of us would just like to see this whole thing take the next step forward, and that is to hold a vote on representation. I think that on unionization, and I think that's what the way the laws have been structured over the years, it's worked pretty well. And I think right now, after some of these NLRB rulings, that we move forward. That's what I'd like to see, is just move forward and have the vote and you know, let the workers decide.
Mm-hmm. David?
Yeah, this is, I mean, I feel sorry for this company. They, somehow or another, the left has seized upon this as, and they moved on to this right away after losing the Act 10 battle and the siege of the Capitol. This was their next frontier, if I can use that term. And so you had what? You had a dozen or 15 students sitting in. You know, if you don't do that once or twice when you're in college, you miss an experience. That and the beer bongs. This company has obeyed the law. What you've got is Voices de la Frontera. The head of that is also the head of the union, the putative union that she wants to represent these employees. They filed these bogus complaints on against immigration. As you noted, Lewis, NLRB overturned that. I wish that Mayor Barrett would stand up, as just like your county executive there has done, and defend this company once and for all.
David Blaska is a former Dane County supervisor and the author of Blaska's Bring It blog. And Louis Fortas is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, our two guests during this edition of the Week in Review. We have our Week in Review quiz and lots of international and national news to cover as well coming up on the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. Here we go. Last weekend was the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner, a gathering for the president, the media, and a few other celebrities. The event was hosted by late-night talk show host Conan O'Brien, who jokingly compared the media present to a high school cafeteria. So which clique did Conan say NPR was like? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. What table did he say NPR was sitting at? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you about 5 minutes to call in your guess, your answer, or email it, and then we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and the winner will receive one of the books that we have featured on the program recently. So we'll announce the winner and the answer to the quiz coming up at the end of the show. Right now we are talking about the top international, national, and state stories of the week with our two guests from different perspectives, David Blaska and Louis Fortas. Let's talk about some international issues right now. President Obama is signaling that he would consider U.S. military action against Syria if his administration obtains hard, effective evidence of chemical weapons use by the Assad government. But he also says that he would prefer to have the support of the international community before the U.S. gets involved. Louis, should the U.S. take action against Syria? Should the U.S. get involved in this civil war in Syria? And how do you feel about President Obama's handling of this situation?
I worked next door to Syria a couple summers ago. I spent some time working in Beirut, Lebanon, which is Syria kind of almost totally surrounds except for Israel and the South, and had controlled Lebanon for years. So I look at the situation, and your first reaction is, you know, somebody pushes you, you know, to the point you want to throw a punch. But at the same time, it is so complicated. There, Syria is not Libya. You know, Syria is a pretty sophisticated. They have a pretty sophisticated military. They have a lot of chemical weapons. They have a fairly sophisticated air force. This would not be, a real easy thing to do. On the other hand, I get sick just looking at what Assad is doing and the number of people being killed. And so there's a big part of me that would like us to intervene in a serious way. At the same time, it doesn't do us a lot of good if we're the only ones doing this. And I think George H.W. Bush, the first Bush presidency, the first President Bush, I think, did it absolutely correctly when he dealt with Iraq, when he developed a huge international coalition, international backing, and he went to the Security Council, and he put together a real strong, broad-based international coalition. So that war was kind of over before it even started. I mean, there was no doubt what the outcome was going to be. And that's what we need to be doing here, and we have the problem with Russia. And that's why Kerry, Secretary of State Kerry, is going to Russia. And I would like to see them move a lot faster than they're doing, but in the world of international diplomacy, things don't move that fast. And it's a very complicated situation, but I would certainly love to see us, you know, get involved and do something. But we have to do it smart, because if the weapons get in the wrong hands, a lot of those Libyan weapons that the international community poured in against Gaddafi have ended up helping overthrow a government in Mali. So it's complicated, and there's Al-Qaeda there. And I mean, and it's a serious, serious and complicated issue. But, boy, I would love to see something happening.
So, David, what would you like to see?
Well, I'd like to see the Godfather 3 movie again, because Michael Corleone said that he keeps trying to get out and they keep pulling him back in. While you were talking, Lewis, and I was paying attention for most of it, I kept hearing Iraq and Saddam. I kept substituting that. It is amazing, isn't it? And I guess, you know, I give a lot of credit to we didn't call him George H.W. Bush, because we didn't realize there'd be another Bush presidency and there might yet be a third. But the fact of the matter is, he didn't finish the job, and his son did.
You know, there was
also. Oh, my God.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We need to move on because
didn't
of.
Did you learn that lesson, David?
We have to move on to some other issues. Sorry,
We're not talking about Iraq anymore, Lewis.
You know what we're going to talk about? We're going to talk about Guantanamo, the detention center there, hunger strike going on at Guantanamo, force feeding going on at Guantanamo. The president this week saying we have to shut down Guantanamo. David Blaska, what do we have to do there?
You know, there is some deja vu all over again, too. This is all news to me, Joy, so, you know, my opinion will be even more ignorant than usual. But as I recall, right after his election, he was going to move it to Illinois. There was not exactly a lot of bidding for, bring those international terrorists to my hometown. So I didn't know there's a hunger strike there. I don't like force feeding. I say save on the food bill.
Well, what do we do, Lewis Fortas, about Guantanamo?
I think close it down. I think.
What do we do with the detainees there?
Move them to
Boston. Send them to Boston.
Whether it's my former home state of Illinois or whatever. This is the United States of America. We do understand how to do a fair trial and have due process, and also convict people and sentence them. And we executed the guy that blew up the Mira federal building. We can go all the way in terms of prosecuting someone and giving them the ultimate penalty, if that's what people want. So I don't see why. You know, again, this is the United States of America. We're capable of doing anything, and we are a leader in the world on due process and justice, and we can't conduct these trials and keep people contained in the United States. Something's wrong.
Let's talk about the Boston bombing. That came up very briefly there. The Federal Homeland Security Office says that they want to make changes to the student visa system. This after the news this week that two friends of the Boston Marathon bombing suspects were allowed to stay in the U.S. supposedly on invalid visas. David Blaska, would you support student visa reform?
Oh, well, you put it that way, sure. I really don't know. Joy, if you use a different word than reform, I might have changed. I don't know. I mean, this is their involvement was relatively minor. It was after the fact, so I don't know.
Yeah, what do you know, Lewis?
First of all, if they had invalid visas, I don't think the law needs to be changed. Just enforce it. And secondly, my fear is that we're going to start cutting back and losing a lot of talent that I'm more interested in seeing talented people come to this country, and if we're going to educate them, let's try to keep them here and benefit from the money that we're putting into their education.
Okay.
So that's what makes America great. I mean, it's a lot of the immigrant energy and that does wonders for the United States. So I don't want to see that get damaged.
Another big story this week. It was in the news that pro basketball player Jason Collins is gay. He came out in Sports Illustrated that he is gay. He's the first male athlete in any of the major sports to come out, receiving all sorts of accolades and attention this week, including President Obama saying he was proud of him. David, is this a big deal to you or not?
Well, the short answer, which I think we should all encourage, is no. I would say that you only gave us half the story, Joy. Jason Collins also came out as black. He said, "I am a 34-year-old NBA center. I'm black, and I'm gay." So this is going to be encouraging to any. Buddy who's black and wants to play basketball in the NBA. As far as, is he the only gay guy in sports? No. I couldn't look it up in time, but I think 30 years ago, there were some Dallas Cowboys, or at least one player. He may be the first active player.
Yeah.
I think that's really... Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, I don't care. I really, really don't care. I don't know that this is... Unless he's making the point that the NBA has had this ban... On gay people from being in, or the Major League Baseball has a ban on gay people being in. I just don't want to know about it. I just don't care. They did have comparing him to Jackie Robinson, the movie's out now, they did have a ban on black people.
Well, is this significant, Lewis, that he is the first active major sports athlete to come out as gay?
Well, I think there's always going to have to be a first, but I think history is moving so fast, and public opinion is moving so fast in this direction of being more open-minded and accepting of gay folks, that this minister who is fighting back and actually one of the players who congratulated him
Leroy Butler
invitation, and. So I think that, when you look back 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now, I mean, people will be saying, what? It's kind of like David saying, black folks in professional sports. I mean, at one point that was a no-no, and now no one would even think to say something, about that.
Well,
I think in a few years, in a very short period of time, it'll change dramatically with respect to gay people.
Congratulations to Jeannie in Madison. She is our Week in Review quiz winner. Our question was, at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which high school clique did Conan O'Brien compare NPR? Well, you can take a listen.
Fox is the jocks. MSNBC is the nerds. Bloggers are the goths. NPR is the table for kids with peanut allergies.
So there you go. The table for kids with peanut allergies. All right. Congratulations, Jeannie in Madison. So, David, did you catch any of that correspondence dinner? Did you think it was funny?
I didn't. I have to go on and look at it, though. I enjoy, it's good that people can make fun of themselves.
Yeah. Did you think there was anything worthwhile there, Lewis?
I love those. I think it's one of the few times when people actually kind of loosen up and can take shots at themselves, and I think that's a great, great event. It should happen every day.
It was fun. All right, Lewis Fortas, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And David Blaska, thank you as well.
You bet.
David Blaska, former Dane County Supervisor, and Lewis Fortas, Editor-in-Chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. Thank you very much to Bill Martins and to... Robin Cherry. She starts on-air producing here on The Joy Cardine Show. And thanks very much to Amanda Magnus, who is going to be moving on from The Joy Cardine Show. We're very happy, though, that she will be moving on to another program here at Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll talk more about that coming up on Monday. It's Mondays with Mike on Monday from 8 until 9. So stay tuned for that. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.